This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two of Sharp Money here on VSiN, hanging out at Bar Canada at the D in downtown Las Vegas. Femi Abebefe, Jared Smith, we're in for Patrick Maher and Dustin Sweetelson. And joining us now in studio to kick off hour number two, it's our buddy Nick Whalen, senior analyst for RotoWire, also host on Sirius XM NBA. I got my acronyms all screwed up there. But Nick, how we doing, man? How's Vegas treating you? We got Summer League going on. It's a good time of year to be out here in the desert.
Fantastic time of year to be out here. You know, you guys know I'm from Wisconsin, so this is a little bit of a departure weather-wise. It's very humid in Milwaukee right now. Yeah, right. It's been fantastic, man. We love staying at Circa. You know, got to hang out with Derek last night. You guys always are great with the hospitality, and nowhere I'd rather be right now. Let's talk some NBA.
I'm sorry, Femi. We're going to have to talk Wisconsin now. But the whole segment's out.
If you want, I can go take a break. You guys can hang out and talk about
on Wisconsin. We're going to talk about what's the beer that everybody loves out there?
Spotted Cow.
Spotted Cow. We're going to talk about
that. Heard of that. What's Spotted Cow?
Bro, it's a local delicacy. It's only sold in Wisconsin. They're very, very careful about it. It's like rumored to be illegal to bring it across state lines. Wow. But yeah, if you're ever out in Wisconsin.
Contraband.
Yes.
And Nick is being humble about it, because I think every person I've met from Wisconsin other than Nick has been like, it's like the best beer ever.
It's fine.
I don't drink a lot of beer anymore, but that I'm intrigued.
Yeah. It's fine. So, it's like a 7 out of 10.
Shout out to our listeners in Wisconsin. Spotted Cow. You got your plug there.
I'm not saying it's my favorite beer, but it is my favorite beer.
It's pretty good. I'll admit.
Okay. I'm more of a Moon Man guy myself.
As a beer connoisseur, I worked in Bend, Oregon for a few years.
Oh,
and that's
no
like a beer like – micro brew, like craft beers. Like, that's
everyone
their deal.
Loves the micro brews.
Maybe turns into a beer snob after being there. So I do have a distinguished palate when it comes to the beer.
Distinguished palate.
Spotted Cow is pretty good. But I don't think it's the greatest thing I've ever tasted, but it is good. Let's talk some NBA, though, because that's what people actually want to listen to. Hanging out, we got win totals on DraftKings that just came out yesterday. I was excited. Jared was excited about this. We talked to JVT about it in hour number one. I want to start off with the Los Angeles Lakers, though. Their win total is at 44.5. They made the big move to get Bronny. Obviously a joke, but they drafted Bronny James. They went ahead and got Dalton Connect in the draft, but they didn't really do a whole lot in like free agency. Right. Where do you see the Lakers here in 2024, 2025?
So the Lakers win total comes in at 44.5, which seems fair, right? They won 47 a year ago. I think this is a little too high. I think the Lakers had, first and foremost, a best case health season from both LeBron James and Anthony Davis in 2023-24. Can you count on that in, what is this, year 21? For LeBron James, age 40 season.
Yeah.
Can you count on Anthony Davis to play 70-plus games like he did last season? I don't think you can. And like you said, Femi, this is a team that I think went into the offseason with ambitions. They're thinking, you know, we could land Klay Thompson. That could be the piece that, you know, maybe moves us finally out of the play-in zone for the first time in like 3 years. They strike out on that, and what have they done, right? You bring in Dalton Connect. I think it was a gift for them to get him where they did in the draft. But is Dalton Connect a guy that's really going to be anything more than your, I don't know, sixth, seventh man at best next season? They still have the D'Angelo Russell chip if they want to do something with that. But ultimately, you know, what is that landing you, right? They struck out on DeMar DeRozan. I think that actually would have been a reasonable fit. You know, that's somebody who's been extremely durable, somebody you can depend on in the regular season, which is ultimately what we're concerned about with these win totals. But it kind of feels like their Hail Mary right now would be Zach LaVine, who is perhaps even more of an injury risk than LeBron and AD at this point. So, to me, I think if you pencil in LeBron for, I don't know, 15 to 20 missed games, which has been the safe bet over the last 5 years, you could say the same for Anthony Davis, that team is really going to struggle when either of those guys are unavailable. So I think 44.5, to me, that's an easy under.
54.5 for the Thunder, which is a high number.
That is.
Obviously, the success in the playoffs last year, I think it's fair to say the roster continues to be at a high level. But again, you're asking a team that maybe hasn't had that success to basically be one of the best teams in the league. High bar, but you think it's clearable.
I think it is clearable. I mean, they cleared it last season, right? And I think the Thunder went out and addressed by far their biggest need. One of the biggest needs any contending team had, arguably the biggest this offseason, which was getting literally anyone else at center, right? All due respect to the other Jalen Williams, I don't think they want him playing 14 to 18 minutes a game. I think this gives them the flexibility now to play Chet Holmgren at the four. You're not asking somebody who weighs, you know, 220 pounds to go bang with some of the big men in the NBA. I think, did they overpay for Isaiah Hartenstein? Perhaps.
He had a great year with the Knicks.
It filled an absolute need for the Thunder. And, you know, I think the other glaring weakness for this team, and this really showed through in the playoffs, was the Josh Giddey fit, right? And what did they do? They flipped him to Chicago. They bring in a perfect fit in Alex Caruso. Obviously, he brings defense. But what a lot of people don't realize about Caruso, he's a 40% three-point shooter last season. So you're bringing even more shooting into this team. They brought back Aaron Wiggins. They brought back Isaiah Joe, two guys they've been grooming on that bench unit. And I think this is a young enough team that that they're not going to be complacent in the regular season. They haven't won anything, right? You know, you kind of worry about a team like, I don't know, Denver, Milwaukee, these teams that have been through the runs over the years. Are they taking the regular season that seriously? Are they pushing for 60 wins? I think OKC is early enough in its development as a team that they still want to push for that one seed, right? They still want to win 60 games. And the last thing I'll say on OKC, everybody plays for them, right? They don't have injury risks on this team. All five starters last year played at least 71 games. That's a huge concern when you're looking at win totals across the NBA. I don't really have that concern for OKC.
Just real quick on DraftKings, OKC is now up to 55.5.
55.5.
Wow. They've been listening. They must be watching the show.
Yeah, did that just update in the last 10 seconds?
No, that updated from when Femi sent me the tweet to today.
Okay. Hey, but it updated. Or hanging out with Nick. I agree with you, though, on the Thunder. I think like there's not a bad defender that they're going to be playing in the rotation. Like there's a chance that they're probably the best defensive team in the league this past this upcoming season. Like it's going to be a really, really difficult team to play. Yeah. And for teams out west, maybe they go out and capture that one seed and ultimately go a little bit further than they did this past year in the playoffs as they bowed out in the second round. We're hanging out with Nick Whalen, senior analyst for RotoWire, host on SiriusXM NBA. How about the other team in Los Angeles, the Clippers? Paul George now in Philadelphia. There they brought in Derek Jones Jr. Kawhi's health status is always going to be top of mind when you talk about the Clippers here. How do you see this playing out for them?
I don't see it playing out well. I really don't. I think the writing is on the wall already, and it's, you know, mid-July with Kawhi Leonard. I don't think he left Team USA because he didn't want to play in the Olympics. I don't think he would have showed up in the first place if that was the case. If you're already concerned in mid-July about Kawhi Leonard's knees, I wonder what that's going to look like in November and February, and especially April and May, which is when those injuries have really popped up for him over the last couple of years. I mean, Kawhi, much like Anthony Davis and LeBron James, I think he had a best-case health season last year, right? Mm. At least in the regular season, which, again, is what we're concerned about with these win totals. He played 68 games last season. Kawhi Leonard does not play 68 games these days. That was the first time in 7 years that he's reached the 65-game mark. I don't think that's happening again. And, you know, they lose Paul George, of course. Like you said, they go out, they get Derrick Jones, they get Chris Dunn, they get Kevin Porter off the street, Nick Batum. None of that really moves the needle for me all that much. And Paul George was quietly fantastic last season. He played 74 games. I mean, he had missed a ton of time, almost as much as Kawhi, over the last 3 or 4 years. And you're taking 74 games out of an all-star, all-NBA caliber player out of that rotation. You're trying to backfill it with a bunch of veterans. I think if Kawhi Leonard plays 55 or fewer games, I think this is a team that could take a big, big step back next season.
Sometimes it's easier to pick the teams that are going to suck than the teams that are going to be good. Yeah. I always say it's easy to maybe say you're not going to be good this year. And that's how we feel about the Wizards, huh?
I don't know how you could feel any other way, man. No disrespect, of course, to the Washington Wizards, who do they do roster by guy Johnny Davis, who might be going down as like one of the worst top 10 picks in a very long time.
I was
going to
say, do you still have any stock left there?
No, I have liquidated all of my Johnny Davis stock. Yeah, that's a penny stock at this point. But I mean, this team won 15 games last year, guys. How are they adding 8 more wins? You know, the win total's at 22.5. You know, their best player in terms of VORP, you know, which is essentially war for NBA, was Tyus Jones last season. They're openly talking about trading Tyus Jones. I don't think Alex Saar is going to be a winning player right away. I think, you know, as far as number two picks go, I think the numbers are probably not going to look like a typical number two overall pick. They brought in Jonas Valanciunas, just an all-time sad signing. You know, I don't really know what that accomplishes. I guess that raises your floor to some degree, but, you know, he's somebody who's taken a couple steps back over the last few years. I think their best or second best player in terms of impacting winning last season, Denny Avdia, he's now in Portland. You bring in Malcolm Brogdon, who I don't even know if he's still on this team opening night. And if he is, you know, you pencil him in for like 38 games. I think this is a team that should want to be bad. That's the other thing, right? I mean, you have a prize in the 2025 NBA draft. It's going to be a completely different scene from what we saw in 2024, where it felt like nobody wanted the number one pick. Washington should absolutely want to enter the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes. They should they should want to make sure that they're a bottom four team next season. And I think if you think they're winning 24, 25, 26 games, I don't know if that's going to do it, right? Because there are other teams that are going to be vying for Cooper Flagg. And I think the other thing you have to consider with some of these bottom feeders is just the overall depth of the NBA right now, right? I mean, there are so many teams, especially in the Western Conference, that want to contend, that view themselves as contenders. I think there's like 12, 13 teams in the West that think they're making the play-in. It's not quite that severe in the Eastern Conference, but if you're a team like Washington, it's hard to find the wins on the schedule, right? It's like you only played Detroit and Brooklyn so many times. So many times. Where are those other wins coming?
Capture the flag is what everyone's going to be trying to do at the bottom.
Capture the flag.
I love it. I love it.
Got one there. Yeah, we had suck for luck. We had all these things. It's capture the flag.
Capture the flag. Pretty good.
That is fantastic.
Did you come up with that?
No, I stole it from somebody. Okay. I don't know who it was. I saw it on social
media. Whoever came up
somewhere.
With that deserves a raise.
They do that deserve is. One. That person was not me. Real quick, here, we've got 90 seconds left in the segment. You're going to hang out with us, talk some NFL in the next segment. But I have to ask you about the San Antonio Spurs. Their win total opened 34.5, already up to 35.5. What are your expectations for Wemby and the crew in year two?
So we're talking about adding, 14 wins to the San Antonio Spurs. And I am all in on Victor Wembanyama. And you know we do a lot of fantasy at RotoWire. We have him as our number one overall player next season. That's over Nikola Jokic, over Luka Doncic, over SGA. I think the statistical ceiling from Victor Wembanyama, I think, is unlike anything we've seen in terms of what he can do defensively. I mean, he could be a 25-14 guy with 5 assists and, 4 or 5 blocks per game. That's not out of the realm of possibility. The question is, did they add enough around Victor Wembanyama? And as of right now, I don't know that they have. Bringing in someone like Harrison Barnes, that's a nice veteran presence. Is that a guy that's helping you all that much in terms of regular season wins? I'm not sure he is. I like Stephon Castle a lot, but, he was, a 28% three-point shooter at UConn last season. So I think that the Spurs are going to take a large step forward. I think we're going to see a monster individual season out of Victor Wembanyama. I would be a little bit skittish approaching the over on that win total.
Yeah,
I was telling
JBT, I was like, at the end of this upcoming season, will it surprise anyone if Wembanyama is the 100% best player
him.
In the league?
No.
JBT said it would surprise him. I was like, this guy, he makes quantum leaps every single year. I just think that this is something that we've never seen before. He's a praying mantis, 7'5" with a step back three.
I'm with you, Ben.
It's insane. So I just think, 35.5 for maybe the best player in the league. We've never seen that. Right. So that's kind of my thing on the San Antonio Spurs, even though you probably are paying a little bit of a tax. But yep. I don't think the tax is high enough. That's my opinion. Nick's going to hang out with us on the other side. We're going to talk some football. He's got futures bets, NFC Championship, AFC Championship. We'll break it all down next year on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, go ahead and get your VSIN Pro subscription. It's an early bird price here in July, but you have to do it before the end of July. $175, almost 50% off the monthly price with that VSIN Pro. You're going to get the exclusive betting splits data. You're going to get the betting systems analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all of our special edition betting guides, including our new NFL betting guide. This thing dropped a couple weeks ago. If you don't have it by now, you're sleeping. You're already behind the market. Win totals, futures, props, awards, best bets, you name it, it's in there. Once again, VSiN.com/subscribe to get it done and get that early bird rate for $175 by the end of the month. This is Sharp Money. Femi Bebefe, Jared Smith hanging out with you guys, in for Patrick Maher and Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with Nick Whalen, gracious enough with his time to spend 2 segments with us. Nick, of course, with RotoWire and SiriusXM. We talked NBA in the last segment. Now let's talk some National Football League. I was talking with Jared earlier. Hall of Fame games, 2 weeks from Thursday.
Crazy.
We're going to be there with the Texans and the Bears. Bears lane 4, by the way. I can't wait for just to have football on the screen, even though it won't really be NFL football. It'll be players wearing NFL uniforms. But, hey, it's football nonetheless. Before we get into your bets, we're going to talk about the NFC South a little bit later, but we want to get your thoughts on this. Looking at the market, Falcons odds on favorites, -115. Bucks 3-1, Saints +340, Panthers 11-1. Is there anything bettable for you in the NFC South?
I still think the Falcons at -115 is a decent number. I think this was a division that last year nobody wanted to win, right? It took until week 18 where I guess, the Buccaneers were like, all right, I suppose we'll take it. And of course it worked out for them. They got a wild card win, but I think Tampa and New Orleans to me are similar teams in some ways. They're kind of running it back with the same core. You don't love the quarterback play for either team. I think Atlanta's the only team in this division to me that you could really sell me on the upside, right? If things break right for Atlanta, they could break very right. This could be a 12-13 win team in a best case scenario. And by a lot of metrics, they have the easiest schedule in the NFL this season. I mean, some of their out of division opponents, obviously they play Carolina twice. That's a nice bonus. Mm-hmm. They get Pittsburgh, they get Denver, they get the Chargers, Minnesota, the Giants, the Raiders, Washington. I mean, these are all very, very winnable out of division games for the Atlanta Falcons. Getting rid of Arthur Smith, obviously that's massive. But this entire season will in a lot of ways hinge on the health of Kirk Cousins, right? I think if Kirk Cousins comes back and looks like Kirk Cousins, who was quietly having an elite season, arguably the best statistical season of his career prior to the injury last season, I think this could be a very, very good team. This could be a borderline dark horse Super Bowl contending type of team. Huge upgrade at quarterback, of course, over Ritter and Heinicke. Their defense quietly took a huge step forward last season. I mean, they were 7th in defensive EPA last season, guys. They were 28th 2 years ago. So it's not just the Cousins piece. You know, everybody's back in on Kyle Pitts in fantasy. Everybody's back in on Bijan Robinson, Drake London. I think the defensive improvement coupled with the addition of Cousins, assuming he's healthy, I think to me at minus 115, a team with that level of upside, that's a pretty nice bargain.
Yeah, the thing that concerns me with the Falcons is just you mentioned the Cousins thing,
with
just the injury. And how about these first three games? I know Pittsburgh, right? You're favorite at home to Pittsburgh, but then at Philly against the Chiefs on Sunday night, like, you know, 1-2 is very possible there.
Yeah.
And what do those division odds look like week four against the Saints? Obviously, those next two games, those next three games,
massive.
Saints, Bucks, Panthers, those three divisional games. Yep. That seems like where the division number's really going to go up or down depending on the results. I might be a little – because I want to see at least a week with Cousins, right? Because, like, how much do the division odds really go up or down if they do start 1-2 after those first three games? Like, you might get plus money in that scenario. Is it just the injury that, you know, you're not as worried about the injury to Cousins, or do you think they can overcome that in a tough part of the schedule early?
I think you're right that maybe the play is to wait until week three. I mean, they're 2-1 at best.
At best.
They could very easily be 1-2, like you said. And I guess I'm not just going to assume that there's going to be an Aaron Rodgers level disaster with Kirk Cousins. I think the fact that happened to Aaron Rodgers in week one last year now is putting people on higher alert.
Sure.
You know, it's like, well, it happened to Aaron Rodgers. It could happen to Kirk Cousins. Yeah, it could. It's unlikely, unlikely.
I think the betting on an injury to occur is harder than to actual handicap the development of a recovery. Like, we're going to know week one, week two of preseason.
Right.
Hey, is Kirk feeling good?
Right.
And if he's not, well, then I really feel trepidation considering how tough that early part of the schedule is.
No, that's true. And look, in a disaster scenario, if Michael Penix is starting for this team, they're probably not winning
the division. The drop-off is pretty significant there,
I would say.
It is,
but it still might be better than Ritter and Heinicke last year, right? I mean, this was a team
that
scuffled their way to 7 wins. They probably should have won 9 or 10 games last year. I mean, they threw away so many games throughout that schedule. Again, it's about the upside to me with Atlanta. It's
like high ceiling, I agree.
Right,
I agree. There's a high ceiling.
Yeah, the best case scenario for New Orleans or Tampa Bay to me is like, I don't know, 9 or 10 wins, I guess. You know, I just don't think those teams have the same level of ceiling.
Tell you what, if Michael Penix is not better than Desmond or Taylor Heinicke, they need to fire everybody in the building.
I agree.
Like, that's like they used the 8th overall pick on him. I still don't understand that selection. You should surround Cousins with more players, but hey, they're thinking about the future as well. We're hanging out with Nick Whalen here of RotoWire and SiriusXM NBA, talking some National Football League here. The NFC, I think this is an interesting one because I've been kind of like, who do I pick in the NFC? And we wrote up our guide. You might like this since you're a Wisconsin guy. I picked the Packers to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. But, I mean, I think everyone feels like they're trying to go against the Niners here. Like, are the Niners vulnerable? And if they are, who do you like to dethrone them in the National Football Conference?
I think on paper, the 49ers are not vulnerable. But we also saw this team win two games that they probably should not have won. En route to the Super Bowl last season. They probably should have lost the Green Bay game. They absolutely should have lost a Detroit game. And, you know, we just talked about not wanting to forecast injuries, but Christian McCaffrey has an injury history. He's had two very healthy seasons so far. He's been an incredible workhorse for this team. Can you depend on that? Can you depend on Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, other guys with storied injury histories as well? And it almost feels like San Francisco's kind of running out of chances here, right? You know, it's like things have broken so right for them in the regular season, at least, over the last couple of years that you're like, can this really continue, right? It feels like another team is primed to rise up. I don't mind the Eagles at 7-1. I'm with you on Green Bay, by the way. I'm almost hesitant to get too excited about this Packers team. And
all you need is love, man.
If you run into anybody else from RotoWire, they're going to want to talk to you about Jaden Reed and Romeo Doubs and Dontavian Wicks and this, you know, unbelievable receiving corps for Green Bay.
Josh Jacobs going to have a 1,500-yard season, right?
Yes. We love Josh Jacobs. But I think the Eagles at 7-1, I'm a believer in them getting this turnaround, right? I mean, this was a team that started, 10-1 last season. We know what happened at the end. It was a complete disaster. It was one of the bigger regular season collapses, I think, truly that we've ever seen, right? I mean, a team that looked like they were rolling. They were the primary challenger to the San Francisco 49ers and just completely lost it. But I think they're going to regroup. You know, they're bringing back all of their core players, right? I don't mind a little sprinkle on Jalen Hurts, 16-1 for MVP. You forget 2 years ago, he was the runner-up. I actually thought he should have won it in 2020.
Probably would have if he didn't get hurt.
Right, exactly. I think he should have won it in 2022. He was the odds-on favorite, guys, after week 12. Last season. And of course, the collapse preceded that. But I think the Eagles are in a really good spot to run it back here. Adding Saquon Barkley to this roster is going to be fantastic for them. And this is by far the best situation that he has ever been in. I mean, you're bringing in an elite weapon who I think still has two or three prime years left. Obviously, you're worried about the injuries with Saquon. But to me, I think Philadelphia has the second best roster on paper in the NFC behind San Francisco.
Bengals seem like they're primed if Burrow's healthy to make another run. But again, we're kind of guessing on the injury front here. But is there a spot in the preseason or a spot in the early part of the regular season that you're like, okay, I feel comfortable now? Or are you okay pre-flop to risk on Cincinnati?
I'm okay with it because I don't know that the number is going to increase unless they get off to yet another slow start, which has played
the Patriots in week one.
Well, that's the thing.
I think they feel good about that win.
They play the Patriots in week one. They play the Commanders in week three. Yep. They play the Panthers in week four, right?
And first 6 weeks, they should be 5-1.
They should. You have to go to Kansas City in week two, but
that's the tough game.
It is. It is. But they should absolutely be 4-1 at worst coming out of that stretch. I think they're going to crush New England in week one. That's going to be a super popular Circus Survivor pick.
Oh, yeah.
This team has challenged Kansas City better than anyone when healthy. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not just Joe Burrow when we're talking about the injury risk. It's T. Higgins as well. It's Ja'Marr Chase, who's been banged up. But I think they had about as bad of injury luck as they could have last season. You know, Burrow came into the year banged up. Obviously, he has the wrist injury. They still won 9 games. You know, there's a lot of infrastructure on this team, I think, beyond the big names. They beefed up the offensive line this offseason, trying to protect Joe Burrow a little bit more. And I like what they did as far as letting Joe Mixon go. That had run its course at this point. You bring in Zach Moss, who's been one of the most underrated backs, I think, in the NFL over the last couple of years. We saw some flashes from Chase Brown last season. And Jermaine Burton, getting him in the middle rounds out of Alabama to replace Tyler Boyd, I think that is a really nice high upside pick. You know, somebody who, if you're in a deeper fantasy league, you should keep an eye on. Tyler Boyd, one of the best number three receivers in the NFL over the last few years. He was on the decline, I think, kind of getting some new blood, perhaps grooming him to kind of be the T. Higgins successor after this season. This feels like kind of the last dance for Cincinnati. Not that they're not going to compete beyond this, but I think this might be their best chance, right? Because they're probably losing T. Higgins after this season. I think they sense that opportunity, and if they stay healthy, to me, they're the primary challenger to the Chiefs. Mm.
The primary challenger to the Chiefs, at least the last few years, has been the Buffalo Bills. We've got a few seconds left here. Their win total set at 9. Looks like you're going under on that one.
I like the under on the Bills. I've even been considering, you know, Bills not to make the playoffs. You can get that at close to plus 150 right now. They had to scratch and claw their way to 11 wins last season, guys, with an incredible run, 5 straight wins at the end of the regular season. You're asking a ton of Keon Coleman to just step in and, hey, be Stephon Diggs for us this season. We'll see. Right. I mean, Gabe Davis.
Fill both of them.
Exactly. They made no replacements. The schedule is brutal. Out of division, they get the Jags, the Ravens, the Texans, the Chiefs, the Niners, the Rams, the Lions. Whew. There's. You look up and down that Bills schedule. There's not a lot of, all right, they're going to for sure win that game type of matchups.
I'm ready for the National Football League to get back, man. Just like with the little segments here, they give us that kind of juice. He is Nick Whalen. Check out all of his work there over at RotoWire and SiriusXM. Enjoy Vegas, buddy.
Hey, will do, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, good stuff there. All right, we'll be on the other side to break down the NFC South, starting with the Atlanta Falcons.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back. This is Sharp Money coming to you from Bar Canada at the D in downtown Las Vegas. Femi Benfei, Jared Smith hanging out here on a Monday. We're in for Patrick and Dustin, who are enjoying some nice time off here in the month of July. But we were joking about it during the break, like, man, we just had Nick Whalen on in the last segment from RotoWire and SiriusXM. He broke down the NBA and the National Football League, but we're two football guys. We're ready for the National Football League to get back here. And when that first training camp video hits the timeline, buddy, I'm telling you, we talk about restoring the feeling. It will be restored at that point.
Well, we were talking about it, you know, because we had our group chat. Wyatt set up his, like, 8th group chat.
I think somewhere
in the last 7 days.
His show in the last 7 days. But we were going back and forth about some of the topics we wanted to talk about today, and I said the best shows that Femi and I have done in the 2 years we've worked together have always been NFL-driven.
Football.
And it just – I think it – you know, you could probably say that about me and a lot of other people because I just think NFL does get the juices flowing in
it
a different way. I think I feel the same way about college football, but obviously as I sit here with my Penn State cup, it's just a little bit different of a vibe.
Hey, Nick had nice things to say about Saquon Barkley, you know?
I'm a fan of listen, I think Saquon is a good fit in Philly. I honestly do. I think he's a really good fit in Philly. I think he fits better in Philly than he does with the Giants based on what the Giants were kind of do. But I want to give Nick some credit because we were just talking about this off air, and I want to bring up this topic one more time because I think early in the year you start to see these numbers come out for some of these look-ahead games. And now that we are starting to get those juices flowing and formulate some opinions, mm-hmm. your brain starts looking ahead. And we just talked about Cincinnati being a higher upside team in Nick's mind heading into the season. We think they're going to perform very well in that week one game against against New England. And then they turn around and play arguably their toughest game of the year the following week against Kansas City. Right now, DraftKings has that KC minus four. And I'm thinking to myself, man, the Chiefs play the Ravens week one. That's going to be a tough game. You know, Baltimore's going to be out for revenge after that AFC championship. Yep. We're assuming that Cincinnati, as a basically a double-digit favorite against New England, is going to stretch their legs. Those week one to week two look-ahead moves, right? We'll get the market up until we get games week one. Then they'll shut down the market week one, and then they'll reopen it Sunday night, Monday morning, heading into week two. I would not be surprised if that Kansas City minus four turns into Kansas City minus three by the time we get to week two. And obviously Joe Burrow's health is paramount, but man, I would love to get a Cincinnati plus four if I can flash forward and get that thing plus three heading into game week. So those are just the little spots, right? We circle that spot. We put it in the back of our mind. It's not something actionable maybe right now. I want to wait to hear Joe Burrow's training camp status, but yep. If he looks good heading into week one, before week one, before that first game against the Patriots week one, I'm probably going to have a Bengals plus four ticket in my back pocket for week two.
Yeah, I think Bengals training camp is going to be all eyeballs on that. Just read whatever you can read. Listen to whatever you can listen to the people that are at training camp, because Joe Burrow is still recovering from that wrist injury that had him out for the rest of the year, a season to go here. And Joe Burrow, like, I don't know, he's just had such bad injury luck, or maybe if he's injury prone. I don't know what the deal is, but he has not been able to actually have a NFL training camp where he just goes in there and is fully healthy and then goes to the season since, I think, his rookie year.
Yeah,
like it's always been something where it's a calf or he's dealing with like the appendix or whatever that he had going on. There's always been something with Joe Burrow, so I just kind of want to make sure that he can just make it.
He's never been a 4-point favorite in Kansas City.
No,
if he's healthy and both of those teams are at full strength, the Bengals should not be more than a 3-point dog in Kansas City.
The one time was the AFC title game when they ultimately beat the Chiefs. I think they were catching seven or so that day, which was, that's a whole other thing. Joe Burrow was catching a touchdown. Like, I don't think we'll ever see that again.
You were mentioning the training camp videos. Remember the Joe Burrow injury? The
calf?
We probably watched it like 30 times, like trying to determine.
At 30? It might have been 60.
But, you know, you hit the head on the nail there with there's just the training camp videos. I don't know if that was the right
nail place. On the head, but we got you.
You were close, and then you landed the plane, and we'll – it didn't land completely. It bounced, but it's okay.
I like to see what you were trying to say.
I like to mess with the English language.
All passengers were safe. Yeah, we all had our seatbelts on. We're good.
Choppy.
Well, when you talk about training camp videos, like for the Packers, they don't allow footage of like 11 on 11. I follow a lot of the reporters and just kind of see the tweets about what happens. And you're just like, wow, I've been like on Twitter for like 10 minutes now just reading Jordan Love made a 12-yard completion to Dontavian Wicks or something like that. It is amazing how just the training camp can get you all hyped up.
We don't need to know those things, but we appreciate them.
But we love it.
It's not something that will ever resonate in my mind when I'm actually betting on a game.
Nope.
But it's like we're so thirsty. We've been crawling through the desert for 3 months waiting for this.
Yeah, literally here in Las Vegas.
We will drink anything at that point.
Yeah. Like, training camp is the oasis. that is what it is. It's, oh my gosh, football is here. Like, light at the end of the tunnel. There's the oasis. We're almost back to being hydrated. But, yeah, like, we're just going to overreact to this stuff, and that's just human nature just because we love the sport. But I guess it's better we got to remind ourselves it's just training camp. Like, what? We were talking about this during the break that everyone was saying Ja'Marr Chase was going to be a bust because he was struggling in training camp, struggling in preseason games. All he did was almost lead the league in receiving and go win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Now he's one of the best receivers in the league. He's going to get a big payday, whether it's this offseason or next offseason for the Cincinnati Bengals. Like training camp, you can't take that and say that, oh my goodness, this is what's going to happen in the regular season. You still got to handicap that. And almost, honestly, it'd probably just to ignore training camp is probably the sage advice for it better, but I'm not going to ignore it because I love the sport too much.
I think ignoring it is counterproductive because then you kind of wake up and you don't have to me, training camp is a good time to formulate your base layer of opinions. Whereas we have these opinions going into the season. Sometimes we actually have numbers going into the season if you cook up ratings. And then we start to make little tweaks and little adjustments. I think training camp is a time for you to polish that. Your initial opinion on a team should probably be formed before training camp.
100%.
And then training camp, you should maybe go, let's say, 5 to 10% in one direction. Don't throw out the farm if a team looks bad. Don't overreact. But definitely log it, absorb it, and use it as your first initial gut reaction to week one. So maybe let's say you're flexible between 5 to 10% of your opinion on a team. And then week one, maybe it's like 10 to 20%. And then I've talked to some people after week two. They'll throw out a whole prior on a team based off of, you know, the first 2 weeks of the season. But definitely, it's a weird, you're right, it's a weird balance because we want the information. We want as much knowledge as possible, but we don't want to overabsorb. It's like you don't want to go to the restaurant when you're going to a buffet. Some people, they go there and they try every single thing a little bit. Some people, they get a lot of one thing. You want to be a little more moderation, 100%. I think, in preseason and training camp.
And I'm about to talk out of both sides of our mouths here because there are exceptions to certain rules. Last year in particular, I was higher on the Carolina Panthers than the market was. And then watching those first couple preseason games, and I was talking with Michael Lombardi, who I do the Lombardi line with. He was a front office executive in the National Football League for a number of years. We talked, we were like, this looks bad. Like, I don't know if Frank Reich is just not coaching him up or what's happening. The offensive line looks like a disaster.
I'm interested in Carolina this year.
And with a new coach, Canales, I think it's interesting. But, like, last year, the warning signs were kind of throughout training camp and preseason of, hey, this team is going to suck. And, like, I went into this regular season and be like, oh, well, I don't want to overreact too much. And I bet on them in a couple games. And I was like, oh, dear. Like, this is really,
after
really
a couple
bad.
Weeks,
but that's probably more of an exception
threw
than the
out
rule.
Your priors 100%. And you said, hey, it's time for me to reevaluate.
But those
this
couple
team.
Weeks, you still lose money.
Yes, you still lose money. But that's why the first couple weeks are very difficult. I think the first week of NFL is really the biggest crapshoot. I honestly 100%. Think it's harder than the last week. And I know the last week is hard
1,000%
because of the roster movements and which team is playing for what and et cetera. But I think the first week's tougher.
Week one's way harder than week 18,
I think.
18,
the first
I
week's
think.
Tougher.
How many years can you go back in the NFL and look at a week one result? Every year there's that what the hell happened there result where
a
bad team beats a good team.
Well, there's no sharp numbers. There's no
look-ahead
lines. There's no way to gauge the market. The market is just it's been up for so long and it's been bet into for so long that there's no way to get ahead of it. It's been up since May.
It's been up
basically.
Since May, since the schedule came out. And even then, like, sometimes some good teams just start the season slow. Yeah. We literally are just talking about one in this segment. The Cincinnati Bengals, every single year, start the year slow as long as it's been Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow. I mean, how many years do they have to start 4-4 for us to realize that I don't know what they do in training camp, or maybe it's Zach Taylor wants to more put an emphasis on ascending in November, December, but they just typically start slow. They lost to the Steelers as a 7-point favorite at home. I mean, if they lost to New England this year, it wouldn't surprise me. Now, it would be glaring because they're like a 9.5, 10-point favorite.
To New England.
But would you be shocked if that happened?
I would be shocked.
You would
because
be shocked,
I think New England,
given their history.
I think New England, to me, is the worst team in the league.
Oh, I agree with you on that one, but it's almost like it's New England. It like doesn't even matter the opponent. I would not be shocked if the Bengals lost to anyone in a week one.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I think based
off of what we're saying, I think this year is going to be different because of some of the variables involved. Whereas there's more questions about them heading into this year than maybe last year because of the Burrow injury last year, which really cost them the whole year pretty much, or at least a good portion of the year, more games than he's ever missed in one season before. And I think because of that heightened level of awareness, and I'll be honest, I'm expecting there to be a lot of reporters saying what you're saying to, you know, Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow.
Why do you guys start so slow?
That is going to be a popular topic.
It's going to be the narrative of Cincinnati. It's Joe Burrow's help, and how do you prevent the slow start that you've had in years past?
I think they beat New England week one. I think they beat him handily. I think that number closes higher than 9. And then I really think the bet to make, if Joe's healthy, is that is that Cincinnati +4 week two against Kansas City. I think for sure that thing's going to close 3 or 3.5.
Last year they started 3-3. The year before that they started 3-3. The year before that 4-2 in those.
Well, at
first
least they're winning
games. They're winning games, but they're just kind of kicking around .500,
kicking rocks.
All right, we'll talk some NFC South on the other side in Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you head to VSiN.com, you'll check out a plethora of actionable articles on the website, including our top picks for NFL win totals from our buddy Josh Applebaum. Josh likes the Atlanta Falcons over 9.5. Paying the juice on that bad boy, -135. He's optimistic about the Dirty Birds down there in the ATL. Check out that article and much more on the newly revamped VSiN MLB.com. Welcome back. This is Sharp Money. Femi Abebefe, Jared Smith hanging out here on a Monday in for Patrick Maher and Dustin Sweetelson, the two of them on vacation, enjoying some much-needed time.
Good for them.
Off there. As we tease,
where do we think they are today?
I don't know where Patrick is at. Yeah, I know he lives down in SoCal, but I don't know where what he's doing.
Probably
for,
by the beach. That's where I'd be.
It's a great place to be, I tell you what. It's a great place
to be. That's
where
I would be.
Yeah, that's a great place.
Let me just tell you, when it rained on Saturday, I was like in heaven. It was so nice going home, and my car said 90 degrees.
Yeah.
Don't worry. It'll get back to a relative normal temperature soon. Yeah. That was an extreme situation.
It was insane.
That is not going to be the rest of the summer like that. No. I think it'll come back down to the 105, 110 range. And then we'll – I mean, listen, once we get to August, guys, I mean, that's – you know, we're starting to maybe see 80 degrees in the temperature spectrum.
That's like a late September.
A boy can dream.
Well, I'll put someone in traffic if we can get 80 in August.
Well, 80 is the low. On the low end. I'm not saying the high end. High is still going to be 100 probably until Labor Day. But when the low is
like,
when
do I sign in blood for 80 in August?
Well, right now the high is like 90, or the low is like 90. Like overnight, it's 90 degrees. Like that's crazy.
Tell you what though, I do enjoy the 90 degree nights. Like we can go outside, it's nighttime, you don't have to wear a jacket.
A jacket unless it's wintertime around here, but I've 100%. Got thick skin. I'm sweating now. I sweat everywhere I go.
But what do you think I have these paper towels that I bring with me?
You should see when I do a show in like a big TV studio with like the heavy lights. Mm-hmm. Oh, like for example, I did a segment during March Madness over at Mandalay Bay, and we had like these like really heavy lights to use because it was like really dark. It's like I was in a sauna. I just have, like, this head that just is gigantic and just sweats often. So, I mean,
Hey, I'm right there with you, buddy.
That's the way that's the way mama built me.
I'm just right there with you. Run a little hot, you know?
Run a little hot.
But you know what? You work with what you got.
You work with what you got.
We're dripping literally. figuratively and literally. We got the drip. We got the drip with the clothes. We got the drip with the literal drip of sweat. But no, this is a lot of fun going on here on the program, as you can tell. Mentioned Josh Applebaum's article. He's over on the Atlanta Falcons at -135 over 9.5. And that's where we'll begin our NFC South preview here. As we talked about it with Nick Whalen, he also likes the Atlanta Falcons as well. They're -115 odds on favorites to win that division. Next closest team is Tampa at 3-1, New Orleans +340. Then you have the long shot, the Carolina Panthers at 11-1. But you were saying that you were kind of intrigued by Carolina a little bit. Are you intrigued enough to go ahead and make the plunge and take an 11-1, or is this kind of more of a win total thing for you with Carolina?
I think I'm willing to wait at least a game or two. I think they're a team that I would be interested in taking a win total to the over if I saw some development. The first part of their schedule is it's daunting, but it's not that daunting to where if they're above what we expect at New Orleans, home versus the Chargers at Vegas – I mean, you could make a case that they can win one or two of those games. I think against Vegas is really the one you would think, even though it's on the road. You know, Vegas' home field advantage here in town is not – I wouldn't call it one of the better home field advantages.
They turn up for primetime games, but the regular games is not that
great. I don't think
they're
going to turn up for a Week 3 game against Carolina.
No, they will not.
So I think I feel comfortable saying that, you know, whatever the full allotment of points you give teams at home field now, which really is like maybe one and a half – I would call it maybe shade a half a point off of that for that game, Carolina at Vegas. I'm hearing some really positive things coming from Chargers camp. It's very early, but I'm hearing some positive things. They think Justin Herbert and Harbaugh are going to mesh well together. Maybe the offensive volume in terms of how many passes they throw won't be as aggressive as they've been in years past. But I think when it comes to winning games and covering numbers, that's been kind of allergic to the Chargers over the last few years. Especially covering, winning with margin, they always seem to play tight games. Yeah. But I think the Jim Harbaugh mentality might kind of ease the tensions there a little bit. That game week one is interesting. It really is, because I'm not very high on New Orleans, frankly, and I'm not saying that Superdome is a very difficult place to play. I would say of all the teams in Carolina's division, I think that Superdome might be the toughest home field of them all. I know Atlanta's got a tough home field too, but
New
Orleans has more of a history with that home field.
Yeah, they do.
I think they've got the toughest home field in their division. So that is a tough game out of the gate. Yeah. But like we said, week ones can be really funky. So I'm interested in Dave Canales. He obviously did a really good job with Baker Mayfield last year. I think we are very down on Bryce Young. And everyone's saying that Bryce Young might not be ready. Well, that tends to be when a guy plays better, right? Like, when the consensus opinion is very solid on a certain guy to the downside, that's when I'm interested in betting on them to the upside, right? When there's blood in the streets, it's time to buy, as Warren Buffett said. So the schedule is daunting. They're, at least according to DraftKings, they're dogs in every game this year. I don't love that. But I am at least intrigued at some of the upside because of just how negative the bias is against them after last year.
Yeah. No, I think also, too, like, the time to buy on Bryce Young might be now just because he's still young in his career. Like,
of
if this
course.
Was year six,
he had
seven,
a brutal and, first and, rookie
and, that,
year.
And if year one looked like how it did for 5 years, and it's like, okay, I don't want to buy that. Like, that's really bad. However, it's only his second year, and they did make the change at head coaching, which I don't even know if Frank Reich was into coaching. It might have just been the, hey, they're willing to pay him an X amount of dollars. And he's like, you know what? I'm not going to turn it down because I can count. You know, like that might have been what it was, because it didn't seem like he was ever really into this. And
no, Dave
and
some people think that he might not have, much better
yeah,
job.
And some people think that Frank Reich might not have even been into Bryce Young. Like, there was a report during the draft process, everyone thought it was going to be Stroud. And then David Tepper and his wife were like, hey, we want Bryce Young. And it ended up being Bryce Young. So like, we don't even know if the head coach and the quarterback were really on the same page. I think that'll be a little bit different with Canales, having worked with kind of miniature quarterbacks in the past. Like, he was a quarterbacks coach in Seattle. Like, when I was covering the Seahawks, I was like, who's this guy that's always like on Russell Wilson's hip? Like, he's always around Russell Wilson. Oh, that just happened to be Dave Canales. Yeah. And then he goes to Tampa Bay with Baker Mayfield. Obviously, he's like 6 feet, 6'1" at best on a good day. He has success. Baker Mayfield probably has his best season of his career prior to maybe the 2020 season. Maybe that's comparable. But he's worked with quarterbacks of this size, and it seems like they kind of want to build this into – not to say that this is going to be the Sean Payton New Orleans type of offense, what they did for Drew Brees and that offensive line, but they did make a conscious effort to go out and sign some bigger offensive linemen to kind of keep the front of the pocket clean, because that's the biggest thing for Bryce Young. You have, if he has pressure, and you can say this about a lot of quarterbacks, but especially a quarterback who's smaller, if they get pressure in their grill, there's no chance of getting a pass off. And that's what we saw last year when he was ducking and doing all that stuff. It seemed like his head was spinning a season ago. So I think there's a chance for Carolina to have some upside here, just given the fact that Bryce Young is young enough. And there was a time, this time last year, where everybody thought he had a lot of upside as the number one overall pick. I don't think you can completely sell that after just 1 year of football, even though it looked really, really bad last year. But, hey, Trevor Lawrence looked bad his rookie year, then they won the division the second year. So it's not like he'd have to do the impossible here to win what I think is honestly the weakest division in all football.
It's definitely the weakest division. And again, we just saw C.J. Stroud do it last year, who is, you know, supposedly one spot below Bryce Young in terms of the talent scale. But I don't buy that. I think both those guys are kind of on the same page. But the offensive line, as you mentioned, when I'm talking about or thinking about teams, the offensive line to me is the first thing that comes to mind.
100%.
And of all of the positional groups Carolina has, so Warren Sharp and Pro Football Focus, right, they grade all of them heading into the year. The offensive line is the highest graded positional unit that Carolina has across the board in any of the other groups, in any of the other rating services. So if there is a reason for optimism, it's last year that offensive line was so bad and the situation was so bad that it's impossible to give a full grade to Bryce Young's rookie campaign because of how difficult things were up front and in the coaching box, as you said. Yeah. Well, now we make significant improvements up front and in the coaching box. So rising tide lifts all ships, right? I think we might see the Bryce Young this year that is on par with where C.J. Stroud was last year. Maybe they don't have the weapons in Carolina like Houston has, but I think you will get better play up front. I think you will get a better scheme in the box. And I think that will all result in more efficient play from Bryce Young. And again, you are betting on a bare bones number right now. What's their win total? 4.5?
5.5.
6-11 is not a good year. Yeah. But that wins you a bet with Carolina. Do I think they're going to win the division? No. Am I willing to bet odds on with Atlanta with Cousins there with the bulky Achilles and all the questions? And all? No, I'm not willing to bet that either. So you can either go in the middle of the pack there and say, hey, I think maybe one of the other teams in this division, New Orleans or Tampa Bay, is going to have a great year, but we're uncertain on them. I think this division is very difficult to cap pre-flop. I think win total over for Carolina makes sense. I think you keep Atlanta on the back burner for a division title, but odds on does not make sense to me.
Yeah. And to your point there, like if somebody were to like Carolina to the upside of maybe sneaking in as a 7 seed to make the playoffs, That's plus 550.
That's a better bet to make on Carolina.
But honestly, if you like them to make the playoffs, just bet Dave Canales coach of the year.
Also agree on that.
Because that's 18-1. If they make the playoffs,
agree.
He will get
100%
all of the credit.
Yes.
All right, we'll be back to talk about those favorites, the Atlanta Falcons, to start hour number 3 next year on Sharp Money.